Hello and welcome to Path to Power, episode 15. I'm Matt Cooper.
And I'm Ivan Yates.
Now, on last week's podcast, I may have created the impression that nothing was going to happen in the week between it and this. And of course, that created a hostage to fortune. And we had the resignation of Geoffrey Donaldson from the leadership of the DUP in the North. And we had confirmation that Simon Coveney is not going to be running in the next general election and is immediately standing down as a minister. So how was I to know? Anyway, I had promised that we would get to your questions. We're going to call it the Constituency Clinic on the basis that you'll give us all your questions, we'll talk about them and do absolutely nothing about it because we're powerless just like TDs are. And we'll get to all of those in just a little while. But let's talk first about the resignations of the week. And let's start with Simon Coveney because you were not in the least bit surprised. You highlighted the potential from giving up politics in last week's programme. But will he be missed, even for the last year of this government?
Well, on the first point, so he was on the 6-1 News the evening that Leo resigned, getting ahead of the story saying he wasn't going to be a candidate. And I thought, smart move, little bit of the Chris Donoghue dark arts there, as opposed to waiting and then, a bit like Pascal, it all kind of fizzling out. And then he went to Athlone. And he is director of elections for the European election. So he had a lead role. This was the selection convention for Midlands Northwest. And apparently he was completely fired up. He was had a zeal for politics. He made a rip snorter of a speech. And he's the man and he's going nowhere. And I was on Katie Hannon on the Monday and I said, this guy hasn't read the tea leaves. You know, he has, as we spoke last week, he has to get a second vacancy in cabinet. He and Leo are the only two surviving members of the Kenny cabinet from 2011. And he had to be the guy to go. And I previously discussed with you, he'd promised his wife Ruth that he would leave politics at 50. He's now 51. And he moved out of Carrigaline into Cove, into a big mansion there. Good luck to him. And all the things I was hearing was more in the direction of Google than politics. So I was saying to myself, you know, either he hasn't read the script or I haven't read the script properly. And it transpired that I think last Thursday or so, Harris and Coveney had a meeting. And I think Harris made it clear to him that he wasn't going to hold on to his present post. And so when you're facing the prospect of demotion or sacking, you've got to get ahead of it.
Funnily enough, you told us a couple of weeks ago that Pascal Donoghue and Simon Harris don't get on.
Yeah.
Right? And in the last week, people have told me Simon Coveney and Simon Harris don't particularly get on that well either. Now, there have been pictures this week of Simon Coveney and his wife Ruth at Simon Harris's wedding in 2017 alongside Enda Kenny and Fionnuala, but I suppose everyone got the invite when you're in cabinet whether you get on or not. But it makes me wonder,
especially if you want to be a future leader.
Yes, exactly. But then it made me wonder about Simon Harris, that maybe behind it all, behind all the bonhomie, that he actually does fight with people, or he doesn't get on necessarily with people, particularly, and I hate to say this given our respective ages, people of an older generation.
Well, I put it like this. No, I would think that there are people of my generation, like a former EU commissioner, would be quite close to Simon. So I don't think it's ageism, but basically.
Sorry, are you suggesting Phil Hogan is a puppeteer?
Did I say that? No, I didn't say that.
Are you implying it or suggesting it?
No, he's certainly not a puppeteer insofar as that. But put it like this. After what happened with Golfgate, I mean, he was Trade Commissioner, Phil, and there was, and in the middle of Brexit, there wasn't going to be an Irish person in the room representing the Commission, whether you like Phil over Irish water or anything like that. There certainly was a feeling this was a mistake by Micheál and particularly Leo to effectively fire him. And so therefore, there's been bad blood between Phil, Leo and Simon Coveney, and there would be a little bit of righting a wrong.
We actually spoke a little bit about Simon Coveney last week, and we spoke in particular about how he would be probably remembered for his impact on the Department of Foreign Affairs, particularly in the Brexit negotiations, that was very much the high point, highlight of his career. And maybe some people feeling that he has been less impactful as the Minister for Enterprise at present, although I do know from people I've been talking to that particularly the American multinationals regard him very, very, very highly. They think he's very capable. But then it struck me that there's a couple of things going back further that he may be remembered for, and not particularly in the most positive light. He was Minister for Housing. He promised he would abolish homelessness within a year. utterly failed in relation to that. And then another one, which will probably be interesting to you, because he had a shared job with you. You're both former ministers for agriculture. Mm-hmm. And he was the guy who oversaw the lifting of the milk quotas. Mm-hmm. And an enormous investment by the dairy farmers of this country in increasing their herds to actually be able to take advantage of the removal of the restrictions and be able to sell loads of milk. And that's not gone brilliantly for a lot of them, has it? Particularly because now you have the green agenda been at play, effectively forcing some of them to curtail their production or to limit the numbers who are able to do it.
Well, just on the dairy farmer point, it went very well last year. Average dairy farmer incomes in 22, not 23, was 184,000.
Hear about the years when they're not doing
exactly,
well, isn't it?
Exactly. But no, a word on Simon Coveney. Simply because I was predicting his demise doesn't mean I didn't rate him. First of all, totally concur with you. He did all the granular knitting in relation to Brexit. He kept at it. No land border. Actually befriending the rest of Europe, which you could have cast us to one side. Top marks for that. I think his 2 years in defence, he actually really cared about it. And, you know, there's the centres there in Cork for the Navy and so on. And he made a real effort there. But I have to say, never once did I hear when Leo beat him and he was deputy leader, he ever sniped. He was a very loyal deputy leader, which is unusual. Secondly, I would say the lowest point for me was Marion Gate with Catherine Zappone. He just did not handle that decisively. He did not force her to do an interview, which he never did. And it dragged on for a whole summer. But other than that...
But so, you know, was that again one of these inside politics type nonsense that the majority of people didn't care about? And I suspect have forgotten about. I imagine that unless you're very involved in politics, you'd be hard-pressed to remember what exactly the whole controversy involving Catherine Zappone was.
Who drives these controversies? Only you and the media. What happened in Golfgate and what happened in Mariangate were the very same thing, but there was a different outcome. One said, well, I took the word of the organisers and so on, and it was that dichotomy. But no, just going back
Sorry, I think we all remember Golfgate, and I think we all remember the sort of the hypocrisy of being told, you stay in your lane, don't go here, don't go there, while off went the politicians to enjoy not just golf, but meeting for a meal afterwards. So you can understand why people went, come on, get out of here.
And what happened in the Clifton District Court when all this went
through? They were all acquitted.
Trial by media isn't a great idea.
The establishment sorted it all out.
No, the case collapsed against the Connemara Coast Hotel.
The Connemara Coast Hotel.
Sorry.
It was the Station House Hotel.
Okay, you're absolutely right. But the point about it is the case collapsed against it. But I just want to go back
Tell you another thing, Catherine Zappone. She was appointed to a special job, UN Rapporteur, wasn't it?
No, that's what she to be an envoy.
An envoy.
For Ireland to deal with LGBT issues.
Yeah. And she got the job without having to go through
No, she never got the job.
Oh, she was going
she never
to get
got the job.
Job.
No, but she went
to... It was ponied up for her.
So what she should have done is wrote to the General Secretary saying, look, this is my CV, this is my record. You can appoint an envoy to anything. Because we made the constitutional change, would this be a good idea? Could you run a competition for this? She texted her former cabinet buddies and went around it by the back door, which was the wrong way to do it and was full of cronyism. And they sort of half denied it and the texts came out and so on. But can I say in favour of Simon Coveney that not only has he been very decent, he's been extremely hardworking. He reads all his briefs. He is really respected by the civil service. I know in Ag House and that. And he was a genuinely conscientious politician. And he had a lot of skills that Leo didn't have. And
would he have been a better leader of Fine Gael in 2017? Look, this is all hindsight and all speculation. But did the parliamentary party get it wrong in 2017 when the membership of the party saw him as a better leader? If he had been leader, would Fine Gael have done better since?
All I'd say is, at that point in time, Leo had an X factor that Simon didn't have. Did that X factor turn into stardom? You can be the best judge of that. But put it like this, you're always looking at the new leader, the X factor. Now, the interesting rumour I'm now hearing is, so they're all typical Cork people. They're bitching and crying down Lee Sideway. Oh, where's the minister's gone? First of all, there was a time since this administration, there were 8 different ministers in County Cork. Catch yourself a reality check. There are 3 senior ministers in South Central, the Taoiseach, Michael McGrath, and so on. This is totally unsustainable. So if you're feeling bad about Simon being gone, this ain't nothing the way this is going to unfold, because you cannot retain that. So Colin Burke could be appointed a junior minister on the north side as a kind of sop. But the reality is that either Simon is going in the direction of industry and won't stand in the next door, but there's now a little whisper that actually he might go for the South constituency for Europe.
The Irish Examiner had this story the other day, but they've already selected their candidates. They've got Sean Kelly and John Mullins.
Yeah, not a problem, because John Mullins really wants to be a Cork East TD. There is a feeling that two seats can't be got, but actually...
Simon Coveney would knock out Sean Kelly.
He would. There's only one seat for Fine Gael, and the fact of the matter is that Simon would get elected if he stood.
But that brings up, there's a question from one of our listeners to Path to Power, which I'm getting to in just a moment. So I'm preempting it a little bit, but they were asking about the potential for by-elections after the European Parliament elections. And doing the calculations, the only one that I can really see as a likely winner that would cause a by-election is Barry Cowan in Leash Offaly.
I'd add two to that.
But Simon Coveney would add to that as well. Who are the others that you would say?
I think Padraig Tobin of Aintu has a real chance of getting elected. He has been at every cockfight, dogfight, catfight for the last 12 months. He was the right side of the referendum and very vocally so.
Do you think he really would want to go to Europe? I think Padraig Tobin...
I'm saying who's going to win.
Yeah, but I mean...
And resign straight away.
You can't hold the dual mandate, don't you? Lose your Doyle seat.
But what Simon Coveney actually did previously was you step down out of Europe and you go back to stand in the next general election.
Yeah, but he did that about 3 years later.
Yeah.
There was a three-year gap. I don't think Padraig Tobin would get away with actually taking the European seat.
No, I think it would precipitate a by-election. I think it might, if he got elected.
Yeah, but it did. But then come back and stand in the subsequent general election, having stepped off.
I just think he's one of the TDs has a winnable chance.
All right, who's the other?
Kathleen Function. From Carlo Kilkenny.
Okay.
Now, put it like this, it would have to be a good day for her and Paul Galvin from Limerick to get elected. But put it like this, there is a whole area of geography, Wexford, Wicklow, Carlo Kilkenny, into Waterford that she might get.
But it's sort of the point I'm making when I meant the Barry Cowan thing is with government TDs, because the other two you mentioned, Aintu and Sinn Féin, I mean, if you expect them or some like them to win by-elections, it won't impact on the government majority. Whereas Barry Cowan will, and there's the potential of Simon Coveney. Now, they still have enough probably in hand, and they always seem to get the independents on side.
These by-elections will never be held. The general election is still in November.
No,
this is because you're diary
arranged. I'm going to Washington for the US election. I can't be having a general election here in Ireland and be required to work here rather than going to the United States. Okay,
time will tell.
We're going to call it the Constituency Clinic. We've been getting loads of messages into our podcast address, which is mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com. And there have been some terrific messages coming in. I'm going to try and shorten some of these, or I'll be reading them all day. But anyway, here's one from Niall in Dublin. He says, one thing neither of you have mentioned is Simon Harris's public image. I would suggest that every vote-getting party leader needs to have something unique or charismatic about their personality. And sadly for him, Simon Harris does not show these traits, in my opinion. Leo wasn't charismatic either, but his USP was that he said out loud what he thought, sometimes foolishly. This one fact made him wildly popular with the electorate in the years before he took over from Menda. I think that he had a bit of a cool factor in the minds of the public. Simon Harris comes across as a bit of a swat who sat in the front row at school. Great if he has lots of ideas and intellect for the top job, but he comes across as kind of annoying too, and he doesn't appear to have a sense of humour.
Well, first of all, as regards any Taoiseach, nothing like being Taoiseach makes you Taoiseach. In other words, the job makes the person. You're completely regarded differently than in your past life. I've seen it with Haughey, I've seen it with everyone right through the... Secondly, I totally agree with you, Niall. You have to develop some form of charisma. You can't just be professional, dedicated and hardworking. And so TikTok might be a part of that. So what I'm really looking at is self-deprecating humour, is if I was advising him how to go. So I think his brother Adam opens a door with the autism. I think the fact that he has Crohn's disease is another thing. So if you're looking for an odourless, bland, colourless character, how can you add colour? I think these things. But he will first of all try and establish him. But like you take Endicenny, I mean, the fact of the matter is the job made the person. And it's actually until you see them performing it, you know, Liz Truss now, you know, she just wasn't capable of doing it. And you know, so I totally agree with you. Boris got away with murder simply because he was entertaining. And I think that certainly he needs to develop an aspect of his personality that people would say, ah, but, you know, I disagree with you, but ah, but.
I suspect that... Well, I wonder how important it's going to be, how important the Ardèche of the weekend and the speech that he makes that will get television coverage. Ardèchean speeches are not what they used to be. They don't get the audiences like they used to. They just don't get the attention. And I just wonder, even before he takes over next Tuesday as Taoiseach, is the air going out of the balloon already? I've actually been surprised by how few people really seem to care.
Yeah, no, and like I've told you, it's a hospital pass that his time to shine will not come as Taoiseach. It will come, and events are unpredictable. But in my view, what you're going to see on Saturday night is, and they're really shaking the trees to get a big turnout in the university in Galway, you're going to see granular detail on things like childcare. You're going to see things on law and order, body cams for Gardaí, more Gardaí, minimum sentences. For agriculture, there is this scheme called Acres, which is a supplement that's paid for environmental participation and so on. I'd see more money there. And so, and you're going to have, as we predicted, a package for small businesses, particularly in the hospital. I wouldn't rule out a VAT change and so on, but that'll be quite governmental. So what I'm saying, and a heavy lean on migration into the asylum pact, the EU pact, and what it can mean in terms of secondary movements. So I think what you're going to see is, and this is one of the things that's very important. Like, people look back, and I was looking at a TV thing of Simon Coveney, whereby they did an interview with a local journalist. And in the background, what's the big iconic entertainment centre? Is it the Theatre House or on the quays there in Cork?
The Opera House.
The Opera House. You see, these things are very important to people like you. Like, I'm not a philistine with the arts. But the point is this. The guy was doing the interview and he said, this guy's been a minister for 13 years, ba-di-da-di-da, but right behind me, he promised there was a press conference here that this place would be refurbed. And it's still the state it's in. In other words, things done.
But sorry, I tell you, actually, that is a major bugbear in Cork. And actually, it features and gives me an opportunity. Did you know I wrote a book called Who Really Owns Ireland?
Oh, why? Yes, I didn't know that.
Because there's this little piece, as a chapter about the regeneration of Cork City Centre in that. And this, again, is something that goes back against Simon Coveney, because there was a commitment made to building a new conference centre on the site of the old Beamish and Crawford Brewery in South Main Street. And the site has been cleared and it is derelict for the best part of
a
decade.
So what's gone wrong?
Well, all sorts of Live Nation were supposed to get involved because it was supposed to be a concert venue as well as a conference venue. The state has had all funding's available. There have been planning difficulties. It's a complete mess. It is just an eyesore left in the middle of Cork City Centre.
A three arena for Cork.
Exactly. That's
the plan.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
That's exactly. And using the beautiful front of the old brewery of Beamish and Crawford on South Main Street. Have you ever had a pint of Beamish?
Would you believe it? When I go into Wetherspoons, they don't serve Guinness, so I have to drink the Beamish.
And it's a nice drink, isn't
and
it?
And it's only about £3.50 a pint.
And it's a nice pint. And that's one of Cork's finest drinks.
It goes down easily.
Exactly. There you are now, you see. But anyway, we've started getting away from what was the point I was going to make. Okay. More of the questions coming into the constituency clinic, as we're calling it, on the basis that you can bring us your questions and we give you the answers and do nothing with them.
So there is a feeling with Leo, like Endicenny got things done. He will get Martin Fraser to ring Secretary General and F them out of it. Leo and Simon's style was not like that. And I think one of the things people are looking to for Simon in terms of that granular is getting things done.
Well, actually, the initial promise for the convention centre in Cork was made at Endicenny's time. Okay, here's another one from DL, as he signs himself, don't mention my surname. I don't have it, so I can't mention it. And says, you're way off, Ivan, about moving Pascal. He'll be the poster boy for Project Fear, which is that Sinn Féin will wreck the economy. Also reckon an election night after a summer PR blitz and generous budget, barring a natural disaster, I just don't see what happens between November and March that will win more votes for any government party, and the clamour for change likely to drown out everything else. It's also going to be a question of striking when the iron is hot. Well, again, as I said last week, I believe that Simon Harris will want to stay in the position of Taoiseach for as long as possible. Human nature, he will not give up the job willingly in October or November. He'll want to go to March. And also, if he goes to March, I suspect he could be in the job for months afterwards, because it could take as long to form a new government, and he could be caretaker Taoiseach for quite a while. But the Pascal thing is interesting, because since we were speaking, and I think even before we were speaking last, Pascal Donoghue has been on something of a media blitz, making it very clear.
He was even on The Last Word.
He was. But
Claire Byrne, The Hard Shoulder, and you within 24 hours, basically saying, I want my job. Don't fire me, please.
But I'm hearing now that there is a serious doubt again. That there is word that Simon Harris might really just go for it and do a clear out. But I just don't see how that works, again, if you want to maintain a relationship with Fianna Fáil, because as you've correctly identified, Pascal Donoghue is the glue with Michael McGrath between the two parties in government.
Well, just to take DL's point, Project Fear, you can rest assured that will not be consigned to one minister. Every single party political broadcast by Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil will be all guns blazing on. The economics of Piers Doherty don't add up. The money tree is back, and all the huge spending they're going to do on health and education and housing is unaffordable, and they're going to scare the bejesus about anyone who's on 80 grand or more.
Donald says, given that Fine Gael has been in power since 2011 and the Irish economy has grown at this point for nearly 10 years uninterrupted, is it not the case that we in Ireland have to be near the summit of this economic cycle? Is it not perfect timing for Fine Gael, jaded from being in office for more than a decade, but having racked up an undeniably impressive list of accolades over the time, to drift across to the opposition benches in time for the next, surely inevitable economic pullback to occur on the watch of Fianna Fáil and our Sinn Féin? Would such a move not copperfasten Fine Gael's record over the past decade and ensure government again in the future, whilst at one and the same time shredding the other main party's claims to economic consequence, as they'll be in office and blamable when such an economic pullback likely occurs in the latter half of this decade?
Well, first of all, I'd be interested in your take on the economic cycle. My understanding of it is, after the three shocks of COVID and to keep the show on the road with the lockdowns, after the price hikes from Ukraine and the distortion of the supply chain and all of that, that, you know, interest rates went up and interest rates are now going down. So that would tell me that we're not in that point in the cycle. However, and inflation has gone down to 1.7% this month, I saw. It was under 2%.
No, it's still over 2% for the Eurozone area.
No, for Ireland. For the first time, it's gone under 2%.
Although you could say food prices are going to come under pressure again because of the weather-related disruption to the dairy and to the tillage
sectors.
But
let's be clear, on the other side of the economics. Sorry, I always believed politics follows economics. I always believed it's the economy stupid maxim when trying to analyse politics. I'm coming to the view that actually, with 2.7 million people at work, with record surpluses in the public finances, that ain't so anymore. It's more about the disaffection and alienation of young people about the asset prices. It's more about health and public services that actually, and, you know, throwing money at them hasn't provided a solution. But for me, the in tray of the next government, all the sustainability targets, agriculture, transport, the built environment, electricity are all going to fail. That won't land till the next government. So I actually think the number of pensioners is going to put more pressure on the health service. So I actually think that this government have actually been coasting on record corporation tax receipts, and actually the next government will find the going a little tougher.
Well, allied to that, Colin sent in a very interesting email, and they're all very interesting, and so I'm delighted with the emails we've been getting to, and please join us. mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com. This one says, I was in the bus down the quays in Dublin watching open drug taking, dealing and intimidation of people walking along. This was at 6:20 p.m. I'm youngish and well paid, hoping to get an overly inflated on the overly inflated housing ladder. Why is there no party really grasping the middle class vote, where a lot of people feel they're high tax costs really don't feed back to them. Not enough Gardaí or a feeling of safety, schools full, paying for private healthcare, road tax then tolls on roads. Is there space for a party to take up the space of significant tax cuts or even to make an argument of shaking up the civil service to actually deliver? Now, there's loads of things in that, Ivan, and I'd actually like to start on the justice thing, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Because you mentioned it already, you expect Simon Harris to make a big issue of this in his Ardèche speech.
And also to move Helen McEntee out of justice.
But
whether she's a junior minister is the interesting point.
Here's the thing, though. I mentioned it to you last week. Even Drew Harris, the commissioner last week, was saying that they need 18,000 Gardaí. The government is talking 15,000, restoring it to 15,000. And this is one of the problems that the government really has, that it doesn't have the police force of sufficient size to do the things like dealing with the open drug taking or the dealing and or intimidation on the streets. It might love to, because they'd love to show, make people feel safer. I don't think they've got the people. This is the curse of full employment. So you've got, you can't fill all the positions in the Gardaí. You can't fill all the vacant teaching spots. You can't fill all the various nursing positions at the moment, because we're in a full employment capacity and we don't have the people to go into these unless they're paid even more than they're paid at present. So that's a major, major problem for the government. The curse, you could say, of full employment means they're not going to be able to fill all those gaps, particularly over the next year. Now, I'm not convinced any of the opposition parties will be able to come into power and deal with those issues. Do you think if Sinn Féin is suddenly in power that there'll be an additional 3,000 Gardaí?
No, but I do think there is a policing requirement to have more visible presence of Gardaí walking around the city centre. And like since COVID, there's a particular problem with young gangs there.
And so it's not just Dublin city centre. People are also complaining about going back to Cork City. I'm aware of people feeling that in the city centre, where an awful lot of Cork people don't go. An awful lot of Cork people stay out in the suburbs. They go to the shopping centres in Douglas or Bishopstown or whatever in Mahon. They don't actually go into the city centre anymore. But when they do go into the city centre, they're appalled by it, oftentimes having open drug taking and a near absence of a Garda presence, exactly the same way as in Dublin.
In relation to Colin's agenda, copy and paste, send to Michael McDowell. That will be his prescription for the nation's woes.
I tell you another one that I would suggest, and sorry, and I have to be very careful here because I don't want anyone thinking that I'm one of the journalists who wants to go work for Simon Harris. There's enough of them at this stage, it seems, taking up the jobs, and I would never have any interest in any working for any political party of any description. But
it's beneath you, Matt.
Exactly. Thank you. Exactly.
Something you'd wipe off your shoe.
But why doesn't
Whereas
Simon,
I would embrace the political world. Carry on, yes.
Yes, well, maybe you, why are you talking about getting
back into No, I wouldn't embrace a job, but I actually wouldn't disown them way you would.
I mean, on Greece, is it that you sort of, like Phil Hogan, you'd be the puppeteer behind the screen?
I actually believe
or the Wizard of Oz in your case.
People who put their names on ballot papers deserve some merit for the courage because they're not guaranteed election.
But what about promising, maybe accelerating, beginning the construction of Thornton Hall Prison? The one that Michael McDowell effectively blew up. You know, we were talking about Michael McDowell, the hero of the independence.
Yeah. Well, put it like this, I see McEntee is now in her flurry of interviews, promised 300 extra prison spaces. So I'm not sure where's the best place logistically to put them, but definitely there needs to be an increase in the prison population because this revolving door is actually undermining the whole thing. We've seen it with disqualified drivers where the whole thing is a joke.
Okay, we've got one here from Owen. He's given me a surname. I'm not going to use it on air. I actually know him. In fact, his father was a good friend of mine in Cork. We used to play rugby together. Owen is saying, I wonder if Ivan would consider returning his calling it segment for the 2020 general election. I lost my shirt on his predictions in 2020, and I'm hoping to recoup some of my losses this time around. Owen, don't do it. Don't do it. Seriously.
Well, put it like this. You know, there was about a dozen seats that I said would go to Fianna Fáil went to Sinn Féin. My Sinn Féin sources didn't see that coming. How could I see it coming? But of the 160 TDs, I got about 120 of them right. But what I'd say about this, I actually had an approach from News Talk to say, would you do the 43 constituencies of podcast? And I literally groaned out the amount of work you have to do. Now, I've retained all the files from 16 and 20, but with new council elections and so on, you could have, on average, in a 43 constituencies, somewhere between a dozen and 20 candidates, which you have to research their geography, where the transfers will go. You have to then go to each party to say, this is our best pony. This is an up and coming person.
And you do all that and you still get it wrong.
No, but I'm just, it is an unbelievable encyclopedic piece of work.
Okay. So you're going to do it, are you?
I don't know. I'm kicking to touch.
Liam in Clare says, do you agree with the Galway councillor Noel Thomas and his comments on Gripped that Fianna Fáil has an extreme left vision for the country? Do you think this is why so many politicians are leaving Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? The leadership in both parties has moved to the left and the rank and file that people resent do not agree with this.
What do you think on that?
I think it's extreme left, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Well, Fianna Fáil, he said, Fine Gael got drifting to the left. I don't think so.
This is Fianna the woke political correctness left. Thing. You see, you can't see it in front of your eyes.
I know, I've got all the texts like that, all right, yeah.
So the point is this, that the referendum, if it taught us nothing, it taught us that there's a gap between ordinary people and the connoisseurs and the insiders in the media and in government.
Where do you sit so?
Oh, I'm running with the hare and hunting with the hounds.
As ever. Okay, lengthy one here, but it's an interesting one from D. Healy, right? And it goes, the voting public tends to focus on the short term. Politicians being logical, maybe rational rather than logical, but anyway, politicians being logical reflect that focus and themselves focus on deliverables within a Doyle term. Many of the problems and indeed opportunities that need resolution are not amenable to short-term resolution and may require a different skill set to that of a constituency TD. Example, the pending pensions crisis, strategic utility and energy planning, making the tax base more robust, defence using the opportunity of offshore wind as a state asset. If so, what fundamental changes should be made to our political structure to deal with this? For example, instead of having multiple TDs per constituency, should we have at most two and use the rest of the PR mandate to choose candidates from a national list with the experience or competence to focus on such issues, perhaps even in the longer term? For bonus points, Ivan, how would you get this implemented as any change would presumably conflict with the interests of elected TDs?
The biggest weakness in our political and democratic system is short-termism. You take Eamon Ryan. And so we failed to meet a lot of targets, you know, right across the board, retrofitting of 3% of buildings, the percentage of EVs, and right across the board. And the fact of the matter is, that won't land till after the next election. And so therefore, the short-termism, this is going to be someone else's problem, not my problem. And so therefore, you look to the civil service. Now, they did introduce a multi-annual budgeting. 5 years, the whole idea of Project 2040 was to give a long-term perspective on infrastructure spending. Has it resolved Metrolink? Has it dealt with the pension crisis? In fairness to this government, they have set up two funds, a climate fund and an infrastructure future Ireland fund, which is the rainy day if the corporation tax receipts go down. So, but basically, I totally agree. And let's be honest about it. I have been that soldier. If I don't get re-elected right now in the next election, I go into liquidation in politics. And therefore, I have to concern myself with the short term. That is the system.
But what about his idea? And actually, I remember now writing a piece for the Business Post after the 2016 election along these lines, suggesting that given that we were struggling at the time to form a new government, Fine Gael was trying to put together an alliance with the various independents, that in other countries, they don't actually indulge independents in the way that we do in this country. And that you have to be a member of a party, and that party has to have at least, say, 5% of the popular vote before a member of that party can be a member of the parliament.
And is this the German system?
It's something like the German system. And it makes a degree of sense because particularly when you look at what's happening with the party system breaking down, and this is not just an Irish phenomenon, this is an international phenomenon that people are not joining political parties, they're not staying in them for lives. I saw one piece over the weekend which was really interesting, sort of comparing it with, you know, the way that people have drifted away from the church and they've drifted away from other institutions that they needed to feel a
trade unions.
And this is happening with the political parties, and people are more promiscuous in how they vote, and then they
more
might
fickle,
vote independent.
More superficial, absolutely.
And that's all fine and well, but it actually does mean that there's a lack of continuity and stability to deal with all of the issues that that correspondent has actually outlined for us. So maybe you do need it that you actually have to say that, you know, we don't have room for one-off independents representing only local or restricted interests. rather than as part of the National
Parliament. Someone sent me a text whose opinion I rate, said, Ivan, we're heading back to the 81-82 situation of three general elections in a row. You know, your point about Simon being the caretaker Taoiseach for a while. There is the real prospect of significant political instability. And it's only then that you miss political stability. Like, you know, like Micheál Martin would probably be the ace card. Everything I've done is to give stability. And they say, thanks, but no thanks. You know, they take it for granted.
Okay. I am aware that most of these emails that I'm reading out are from our male correspondents. Believe me, there's a lot of female correspondents as well to mail@pastorpower.com. And we will get to everyone, as many as we can. But here's one from another man, Tony, who says, as someone who moved from Dublin to Wexford a few years ago, I just want to say from what I've seen and heard locally, I totally agree with Ivan's prediction about the number of independents who'll be elected at the local and general elections. What surprises me most is the antipathy towards the Green Party and Eamon Ryan in particular. It's not a view I share, and a ragtag and bobtail assortment of independents is the last thing this country needs in order to tackle the problems it faces, climate change in particular. So without going back over the ground we just covered, but I do think there may be a sort of a culture war issue that is emerging here in Ireland.
But the cycle of the Green Party has always been get 12 seats, get into government and get the boot.
Yeah, but hold on. The thing is that, you know, the way the Americans are attached to their guns, I think we're attached to our cars, particularly in rural Ireland. And I'm going to surprise you now a little bit, maybe in this one.
Because you don't drive.
No, I don't, right? Okay. Aileen drives.
Yeah.
And if I need to go to particular work events, she drives. You like the way I think
Deirdre drives you? I have a chauffeur, you. James, brings me everywhere.
I thought Deirdre had to do all that
she
work
does a
for
bit
you,
of that.
Right? Okay. So it may be for particular work reasons or whatever, she will drive me to places and we have the car for that
do
as well.
Do you sit in the front or sit in the back? Because I usually sit in the back. You know, I have notions.
Because
you know,
I have
my ministerial days.
But you lie down across the back,
I do, actually. It's my to do with that.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. Where was I going with this now? You have this habit of interrupting me and stopping
the will
where
to
we're
live
going.
Here, but carry on anyway.
The point is that the car is an important part of rural Ireland culture because of the lack of available public transport, which means that 17-year-old kids, is one of their ambitions as soon as they turn 17, is to get the driving license and have the freedom of using either their parents' cars or their own cars. And we've seen in the last few days, there's been very interesting figures, not just in Ireland, but globally, that the rise of the electric car seems to be stalling and going into reverse.
There's a specific reason for that, the second-hand market.
Well, there is. There's a number of
reasons.
There's
always anxiety about, you know, the recharging.
Why buy an electric car if you find that you're not going to be able to resell it in a few years' time to actually buy the next car? And as the price of the new cars comes down, it's having an impact on the second-hand car. So that's one of the things. There's also the range anxiety and the rest of it. However,
but you think the antipathy to Eamon Ryan is to do with car owners?
It's partly that, and it's partly car owners. Well, shag you, you're telling us use public transport. What public transport is there? There may be some degree of public transport in cities, but to be honest, it's not even good enough in the cities yet to justify people
giving up their cars.
Yeah,
I'll just give you an example. Like if I want to go to the Curra or Naas racecourse, there is no public transport option to go from Wexford to Dublin and down to Kildare. There is no cross country. Same if I want to go to Galway, go to Portlaoise, there is no public transport option for me.
Paul says, my question is one for the future. Do either of you see the potential for a party having a majority in government over the next 15 to 20 years? Or will it just be made up of continuous coalitions? And here he also, Paul says, hope to see you both on the telly hosting the leaders' debate for the next general election. I'm not sure there's a TV station that would have us. Okay, it's an interesting point.
Single party government is over.
It's over. Those days are over.
And I'll tell you why. Because you take in any 3, 4 or 5 seat constituency, it is so hard to get a majority of seats for one party. You've got to manage transfers. You've got to manage very competitive. You know, your biggest competitor is your party colleague. And so it's much easier for the Greens, for Sock Dems, for Aintu to get 1 seat out of 5 for an independent. And the system greatly favours fragmentation. So that's never going to happen again in my lifetime, single party government.
I'm just going to read Sam's comment. He's actually been sending in every week. This one says, you're just laughable, Matt. You actually think you're in the centre. You're polarising everyone with your lefty liberal take on everything. You're way off and you don't realise it. Sad.
Well, there's nothing I can add to Sam's comment. On the money, as ever.
Okay, but here's an interesting one from Barry. I'm a constituent in Cork South West. I wonder what Ivan's take is on a rumour I've heard locally that with no Fine Gael or Sinn Féin TD currently in the constituency, Holly Kearns' seat is bound to be targeted. She's a big national profile well, but no strong base of support in the constituency. The word is that Roisin Shortall will be retiring and Holly will relocate in order to secure her seat. Have you heard similar? Would it be a credible move for Holly Kearns? That's interesting. I see. I actually think that she is in danger in her seat in Cork South West. She was a surprise election winner the last time round. She has developed a national profile, but yes, Sinn Féin want a seat there, Fine Gael want a seat there. She may actually have a better chance of retaining it because of her high national profile, that people will vote for her because she's the leader of a national party. I think it's too late for her to move somewhere else, isn't it?
So Cork South West is a three-seater. Michael Collins will top the poll. He has eaten Fine Gael's lunch there, an appropriate name. He is this new independent
Ireland.
He's
Micheál Collins, isn't he?
We'll put it like this. He's a real, in around Skibbereen and Skull and Kinsale, he is grafting and grafting and grafting. So he's not going to lose. The I think Christy O'Sullivan, the Fianna Fáil, should hold on. In all circumstances, that was Joe Walsh's old seat there. The issue, therefore, is if Tim Lombard, who's a senator, because this is the home of Michael Collins, this is the home of Fine Gael. Now, I think Mike Collins has taken that vote, but the reality is Fine Gael would put this on their hit list. They made him a senator. He's a nice guy, but that is definitely a battle. Add into that, you know, 2-1, the last seat, throw in Sinn Féin. Can you see any constituency that won't return a Sinn Féin TD? Put it like this, I don't have the intel on where they stand post-local elections there, but definitely a flashing amber danger sign for her own seat. I don't think there's any chance that she'd move constituency. And even if there was speculation about that, it would cost her 3,000 or 4,000 votes in Cork South West.
Okay, we will return to the constituency clinic in future weeks, but there's a couple of other things just to finish out that I want to ask Ivan about. And I suppose we have to take great care in discussing the consequences.
I was never troubled by taking great care.
Well, you better be legally, you better be very troubled by this one, because we're going to talk about Geoffrey Donaldson's departure from Northern politics. We're not going to go into the reasons why. I mean, we know he's facing criminal charges. He's denying the allegations that have been made against him. But now that he's gone, will we miss him? I mean, has he been, funnily enough, in a strange way, at the end of a 40-year career, of most use recently in managing to bring the DUP into the Assembly and into the Executive, getting over the fear that they had in the DUP of being seen to be secondary to Sinn Féin, with Michelle O'Neill holding the First Ministry, Emma Little-Pengilly holding the Deputy First Ministry, that this was the last thing that they could consider, and yet he managed to get them in there, and now no sooner has he done it, he's gone.
So leaving aside all the criminal and personal aspects of this, the political fallout is potentially very significant. First question is whether Stormont, right? And if you look at the votes, the two votes they've had recently in relation to the leadership question, 7-5 in returning to Stormont, 19 to 14. So the situation is that the perception is that the cabal in the head office has been running the party. Enter stage left Gavin Robinson, East Belfast MP, and also a man of some stature, physically a very big man. I think that they face an existential threat in terms of the DUP's rating. UUP, the traditional unionist voice, Jim McAllister, and the Alliance Party, all prepared to eat their lunch. So what does a political party do with an existential threat? They close ranks. So I think actually what's going to happen, this is going to solidify. Gavin Robinson will be maybe unopposed as a leader, the Jamie Bryson wing and others like Jim McAllister. So this vacuum has to be filled, and because there's no return for Donaldson. And so therefore, I actually think that they will close ranks. They will put up a united front. The difficulty for them is there is a very kind of, I find it distasteful, cocktail of religion and politics with the DUP. Things like anti-abortion, Sunday trading, things like you couldn't open a betting shop in the north on a Sunday. Ridiculous.
That's very woke, isn't it?
No, bloody nonsense, considering all the best fixtures in Ireland are on a Sunday. So the point about it is I'd have no truck with it, but I actually think And so the protege, his protege was Emma Little Pengelly. I think because Stormont, you see, you must remember, you've got to make the union with Britain work. The only way it can work. In other words, like you take direct rule, that doesn't work. So therefore, first of all, I don't think they have any choice. I think they will do this. But long term, the party to watch in Northern Ireland is the Alliance Party.
Well, actually, I know I'm going to throw one at you that you may not have prepared, and I'm sorry about this, but I'm sure you read the papers on the train up from Wexford this morning. This Institute of International and European Affairs assessment of the cost of United Ireland.
20 billion.
Oh, so you are aware
of
it.
Yeah.
I wonder how that would actually focus minds in the event of a referendum taking place in the Republic. Because my view has always been that the heart will rule the head when it comes. If the people of the Republic are offered the opportunity of a United Ireland, they will vote with their heart and they will say, yes, this is actually what we've always wanted and what we need to do. But I wonder how significant a number of people might there be who, if confronted with the possibility of, oh, it's going to cost us that much, our taxes are going to go up 5 cents in the euro to pay for this, as to whether they might quietly and secretly vote no. And look, I know that this is just one economic assessment, and there have been others done previously which have suggested an economic boom as a result of reunification. I actually don't see that on the basis that if you add 5 million people and 1.5 million people, you still have an economy which is smaller than that of Greater Manchester. It's not going to make an enormous amount of difference for the amount of revenues you can generate, but the costs of putting the two jurisdictions together would be enormous.
I'm surprised that this isn't a newsflash to me. I've been saying this for 10 years, that the Northern Ireland economy and the six counties is a public sector economy. It was a security economy previously, without subsidies and transfers from London, of at least, even taking the uplift of more all-Ireland trade and, you know, being in a sweet spot with Brexit and all of those positivities, it's a minimum liability on the Irish taxpayer of 12 billion a year. And go figure. And the truth of it is that we have enough problems without this. And so
Are you saying you wouldn't vote for Irish unity if given the opportunity?
I'm one of the strongest partitionists going, because I live in the real world. I mean, unless the EU is prepared to write a cheque for it, and I doubt it, and unless London is prepared to keep going for it, I'm not going to pay for it.
This is our sovereign national territory. This is 32 counties, an island where we should all be together.
See, the thing is,
just like
listeners probably don't realise that when Matt is trying something on, he has a little glint in his eye. It's a kind of cork thing, and it means he's talking shite and he knows it.
Okay, I know a way I'll be voting if we ever get a chance to vote in a referendum on a United Ireland. One final one, and we're going a little bit over time, but I'm enjoying the chat, Ivan, so I'm going to throw one more at you. What future for Michael McDougall? Because I sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek, I have to say, wrote a piece recently suggesting, could he fancy himself for an Áras an Uachtaráin, that he would see himself as a defender of the Constitution.
It's hard to fill those column inches, aren't they? the Daily Mail, the whole page of the Business Post. It's not easy. Your musings about the park, go on.
Yeah, so, but then more people are saying that he has ambitions in relation to the Dáil. And I think, hang on, he's 72. Okay, it's a very competitive constituency he'd be going into, Dublin Bay South, because you have party leaders there in Eamon Ryan and Ivana Bacik. You have Chris Andrews, once of Fianna Fáil, now with Sinn Féin. You've got Jim O'Callaghan of Fianna Fáil. You've got Fine Gael desperately trying to get a seat back there. It could be Kate O'Connell, who might run. Your man James Gagan ran in the by-election. So if McDougall was to come in there, I'm sure his ego would suggest he thinks he'd win it. Do you think, would he win it? And if he was to win it, could he do as Shane Ross did in 2016 and be the sort of the linchpin of a form of independent alliance that could find its way into government?
Well, I spoke for half an hour with Michael McDougall, and I certainly got the impression that he's tempted and probably feels he could top the bowl in Dublin Bay South. And he's had three separate sessions in that constituency, which used to be Southeast and different things. And it is in his mind.
Sorry, and he was dumped ignominiously by the electorate in 2007 at a time when he was
Taoiseach. What he says himself is that he actually stepped out of politics. Fergal Quinn rang him and said, I'm stepping down from the Senate in 2016. Would you please consider taking over this? And he became a senator in April 2016. Put it like this, he's got the bug. The bug is, it's an itch to scratch.
Is it ego?
What?
Is it ego in his part?
Sorry, well, I'm sorry. One person's ego is another person's desire to serve in public. You know what I mean? But I'll put it like this. The referendum has given him a fillip. Personally, I think there are two options. He could go back to the Senate and be an eminent Grise from there and even be appointed to cabinet if he put together a Charter of Independence. He could go for the presidency. When I put that to him, he actually said it would. I said, look, there's a constitutional role there. And you know what? I actually think he'd make a reasonable president. He certainly would be cerebral and we'd get away from the poetry stuff and all the stuff that we have had to put up with. But the point about it is that, and the airy-fairy sort of Cuban economics that we've had for the last 10 years. But so I would like him as president, but he certainly said no to that. But put it like this, I'll finish on this note. To be a last-minute surprise candidate, and the one I'm going to throw at you in Midlands Northwest, is Kieran Mullooly. I now hear that he may enter the fray as an independent candidate.
Independent
candidate. Alan Shatter is talking about a comeback in Dublin.
Kieran Mullooly piggybacking on his people knowing him as the former RT correspondent.
Yeah, and a community worker locally. Actually, I could write his CV for you. That would be pleased. The point is this.
But sorry, what about Alan Shatter? Alan Shatter, who attracts an enormous amount of vitriol
for his pro-Israeli position. Yeah,
I mean, he's blind.
Oh, his candidacy would be a referendum on Gaza.
Yeah, because he is blind to the atrocities been carried out by Israel and Gaza.
Well, my point is this. When the TPDs launched in 1985, they were on 34% in the polls. Several months later, they actually got 12%.
Yeah.
There is a benefit. If you're minded to be a Kieran Mullooly or a Michael McDougall, leave it to the last minute because the whole country is talking about you and you get momentum. You become stale if you do it too early. So
Which could be Sinn Féin's problem in that they peaked too early in this electoral cycle.
There could be loads of surprise people. I'm not available myself. I don't know. You're so anti-politician.
Sorry, just what I say about the Alan Shatter thing, as I said, he is blind to Israel's offences, the genocide that's going on in Gaza. But in fairness to him, I mean, he is very protective of Israel and it has been subjected to terrorism by Hamas as well, which we shouldn't forget. But at the same time, what has been done in response to what happened on October 7th is shocking beyond belief, which is why I think the vast majority of Irish people, whatever their political background, left or right, are horrified by the bloodshed and the suffering that has been caused to the people in Gaza. Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll try and do another constituency clinic over the next few weeks.
How do people get in touch?
Oh, very good, Ivan. It's at mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com. So mail@pathtopowerpodcast.com.
I'm not able to send emails myself. I'm just catching up with texting.
You're just about able to take them. Okay, we will. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. YouTube is another option. You don't even have to watch us necessarily on YouTube. Just play it and don't look at the screen so you don't have to see us. And we will be back with another Path to Power next week. So from me, Matt Cooper.
And from me, Ivan Yates.
Thank you very much for joining us.